Welcome to Country Fried Rock, where we talk with musicians to find out what inspires their creativity. Country Fried Rock, music uncovered. My guest today on Country Fried Rock is Brian Venable of the band Lucero. Welcome, Brian.
How are you doing?
Doing great. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, man, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I've always enjoyed your music, and I'll tell you when y'all came up again, interviewing some bands who played the Lucero Family Picnic.
Oh, which bands?
Well, it started, I guess, with Glossary.
Yeah, I thought he played Fiddle Steel with us.
It was that connection, and then talking with some of the guys from Centromatic, and it was like this whole small family thing.
We stopped doing it for a little bit, but we're bringing it back. So that's part of the reason why the Family Picnic to me was so important, was there's this kind of weird little family of bands that tour constantly that don't sound the same, but are the same ilk, maybe for lack of a better word. I wanted a Sub Pop or a Revelation Records or I don't know. I thought it'd be cool to have a yearly get-together, all the bands that tour a whole lot that aren't on the radar necessarily.
Right.
That's cool that everybody's talking like that.
Yeah, it was very cool. It's always nice to see how that kind of family tree overlaps. How did you get into music as a kid?
My father. I mean, he's a musician. He's been on Bill Street. I mean, we're shoe repairmen by trade, whatever. Even when I was little, he was always trying to get us to play music. And then when we got to teenage years, he wanted, you know, let's have a family band. I spent my 20s traveling around being a punk rock hobo kid. All I wanted to do was write poetry or zines or, you know, just, I didn't want to play music. But he was like, I don't understand it. If you learn a bass and learn three scales, you can play music, make money, and you can trade. You know, I was like, yeah, oh man, okay. And then it got to the point where one day I was like, it was like I wanted to learn to paint too, but I was like, I want to start a band, just say I did. Kind of thing. And I don't know, I don't know if you've seen it on YouTube or not or heard about it, but we played the Fillmore last year, and I flew him out, and we brought him out on stage. It was literally all he ever talked about was playing the Fillmore when I was growing up. So I brought him out to play, and there was all kinds of influences. My mom listened to music and everything, but my dad lives and breathes music. It has been a constant in my life.
When you were doing the zines and stuff, what kind of punk rock was talking to you then?
Oh man, I was a dirty little Memphis Crusty type kid. It was Rorschach, Black Flag type stuff. Top Out was a local band. His Heroes Gone was a local band. It was Life's Blood. It was pretty crazy. Nothing really melodic, let's just say. It was pretty much my dad, you know, hate your country music type stuff. A lot of, you know, bands that have put out a 7-inch, go on tour for 2 months, play to 10 people a night, and come home and go back to college or get real jobs or...
So then as you move towards finally saying, yeah, I'm going to start my own band, where did that head for you at first?
One of my best friends, Matt Bradley, who's in Tears Don't Matter Much, is Matt Bradley with the Broken Teeth. He moved away and sold me his Bassman 115 cabinet and Bassman head. And my dad gave me some broke down guitar that I still wish I had. It was a Guild S70D, whatever, it looked like a battle axe. It was amazing.
Yeah.
2-octave neck. Guy in Mud Slobberbone used to play one. Before I even started the band, I mean, I talked about it for a while, but there was that whole learn to play guitar hurdle. I would go down, this is before the internet, I mean, it wasn't before the internet, it was before we had the internet. I would go down to the library and get all the song books of songs that I liked. I was like, okay, I like Elvis Costello, I like, and I would Xerox them, 7 cents each. And I would go home and I wouldn't learn the songs, but I would learn the chords, kind of taught me to change like, oh, C to A or something. You know, it was just, I still don't know any lyrics to anything, really. You know, Lucero is the only band I've ever played in. Started playing guitar to play in it. And then when I found Ben, I mean, that was the funny part. Was I was like, man, I got all these songs. And he was like, cool, so do I. He came over to practice, and he had 3 full songs with words. And I was just like, yeah, I was just like, I have this part that goes, do-do-do-do-da-da, you know. And that's about, that was the song kind of thing. And he stuck with me. But he would leave, and I would get the books back out, like, or the videos, like, pentatonic scale. In the old days, people would laugh and be like, your sense of space is so amazing. And it just realistically was, I don't know where to go next, so I'm just going to hang here. And it kind of created a style. Hey, this is Brian Venable from Lucero. You're listening to Country Fried Rock.
That whole music is the space between the notes and all of that.
Yeah, well, I didn't know. I was just like, oh, this sounds right. And that's like Jim Dickinson would always laugh. He was like, I stay up night trying to figure out how you start a song. And man, it's interesting how he's playing an A major and you're playing an A minor. And at the time, I had no idea there was a distinction. You know, I mean, literally, my dad played music. He tried to teach me growing up. I fought it and that kind of stuff. He showed me some, you know, the big cowboy chords, kind of the big open ones. But learning to play with Ben, he had his own style of chord. I've learned to play guitar to Ben Nichols' chord structures, right or wrong. We were married forever, guitar-wise. I wanted to start a band, and then it was me and Ben, and I just started finally roping people in, and they'd play a show or two and then quit. And eventually, Roy and John, we jailed.
Hey, y'all, it's Sloane Spencer. Thanks so much for finding all these new old episodes of Country Fried Rock. I've got something completely different available these days called Sleep with Rock Stars. And it all started from a listener comment back in the very early days of Country Fried Rock who said, you know, I slow these down to 75% and fall asleep to them. And I was like, well, over the years, I started thinking about it, and I recently started Sleep with Rock Stars. It's the Gen X Sleep Podcast, and you can find it at sleepwithrockstars.com or your favorite podcast app.
Like any band with a lot of players, there's been some change over time in terms of band lineup, but the core of you all have stuck together through a lot of other changes as well.
I quit in 2003. That was me just, my dad was sick. I was tired. I was, you know, I just didn't know. When you start, that's the other, coming from the punk rock, starting a band, you think it's us versus the world, and, you know, we're going to do this, and there's no compromise. And when you really, what you're doing when you start a band is finding four other slightly uneducated slackers, and you're starting a small business, and there's compromise and whatnot. So for 1 year, I was out of it for a while. But then when I came back, I was like, oh, I wasn't doing anything else, and I love doing this and whatever, but it's pretty awesome. I mean, you don't see a lot, you know, you got your U2s and your Chili Peppers and whatever, maybe Rolling Stones type bands, but a lot of bands you don't see that there's not, you know, the constantly Spinal Tap revolving drummer or bass player situation. So we've been real lucky.
As you all are coming to anything new, what's the process for you as a group?
Song structure wise, I mean, been the lyricist. I think in the beginning, you put all four of us in a room, we'll all argue about it, but, you don't have all four of us. You have me. But in the beginning, Ben would show up with, I have these songs with words and music completed, and we would just flesh them out, write our parts and everything. So he was definitely, he's the songwriter. No taking that away from him. But nowadays, he'll show up with a riff or a piece, and like him and Roy will work out tempo, and we start adding components to it. And for us, it's been a 14-year slow-growing process. I think for the rest of the world, they've seen it in 8 albums, so it might be a little bit more abrupt. When we played by ourselves forever, it was, we knew what we could do. I'm going to play single notes. Ben's going to play chords. John's going to stay underneath it. Roy's going to do some interesting drum patterns. Bam.
There you go.
But then we get Rick. When Rick started playing with us, it's all of a sudden you're just like, ooh, we can do boogie woogie, you know, or we can do lighter shade of pale. We can do anything. It just started to get to where whatever we came up with, we were becoming more capable. Somebody in the band could do it, and the rest of us could catch up. You know what I mean? And that's what the advent of the horns, or the addition, not advent, is the same thing. It's like somebody, I was joking nowadays, somebody in Minneapolis, some of the doormen told us, or we overheard it. I don't know how it came about, but somebody asked the doorman at First Avenue, was like, who's playing tonight? He's like, oh, some Memphis R&B band. And we were just like, yes.
Awesome.
Yes. That's one of those things where we didn't quite realize it. People like, oh, y'all aren't country enough, or I miss the old flat, sad country songs. And when we added the horns, I think we unintentionally and unwittingly maybe became, or were trying to become an R&B band, which is another Memphis thing. You can be country and R&B. You know, like, it's not so line drawn in the sand. But I think that's where I'm trying to explain that, oh, we're a country band with horns. We're just a rock and roll band, you know, which rock and roll lets you do anything.
Exactly.
That's the freedom of rock and roll. Whereas if you were to say, hey, I'm a country band, you wouldn't have perimeters you could not deviate from. Or if you're like, I am a soul band. But just slowly added people, the awareness has dawned on us that we're all getting better as musicians. I've been doing this 14 years. I can play guitar better now than I could in 1998. You know, you can't help but get better. And with the addition of these crazy musicians that have joined us, it gets fun almost. You just start, you're practicing and you're laughing. Like, we still might do it, but we tried to cover Space Trucking by Deep Purple, and we couldn't quit laughing, so we never could finish the song. But not in a, like, bad laughing, but just like, this is so awesome, and just do-do-do-do-do-do-do, Space Trucking, you know, and you're just like, this is awesome. If we could actually do this, it'd be amazing. I picked the song, but didn't get to play on it because the studio was so small. But when we covered the David Bowie Modern Love, half the reason you're like, man, we got the horns. We can do Modern Love,
yeah.
You know? And it's fun. But that's the thing. Like, Todd just played tambourine because he couldn't fit the pedal steel in there. I was like, man, half the time they tell us we're recording these things, they don't tell us that they're actually videoing them too. So I didn't realize they videoed it because I didn't go up there. But I went up there and was like, man, I don't have to cram in here. There's enough instrumentation that we can be Lucero and still record this. You know, we don't need two tambourine players. So, yeah, I got a lot of phone calls like the day it came out, like, where were you? I was like, oh, I didn't know they videoed it. Yeah, I was asleep. It was awesome. But being able to pick songs like that to where you can actually be like, we can do a horn song and have horns actually on it.
By defining yourself as a rock and roll band, you have more options. I mean, nobody thinks twice about a gospel choir backing rock and roll.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Stones did it 40, 50 years ago.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's getting to that point now where people want us to be what they want us to be.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, you can only be what you want to be. That sounds real heavy and weird, but we like making music. We like driving ourselves to make something different. Mm-hmm. I don't want to make Tennessee eight
right.
times. I think that's the thing, is being able to grow and learn as a musician and as a person, subject matter-wise, musically, shows and everything. 14 years ago, I wasn't the biggest R&B fan. I wasn't the biggest country fan, but you get older, you get kids, you got a truck, you're upside down on your house, or, you know, two or three girlfriends leave you, and you're just kind of like, whew, I got this to write about, I got this to draw upon, you know?
Several great musician friends of Country Fried Rock generously donated songs for a free music sampler. Download it at noisetrade.com/countryfriedrock. 19 songs to help raise awareness and money for Nucci Space, a nonprofit serving the mental health needs of musicians in the Athens, Georgia area. Find out more about Nucci's at nuci.org.
Saying, ready to make it exciting, I'm playing a touring rock and roll band. My life can never be as bad as all that. In the end, I play music for a living. So that bleeds into it, too, where you're writing these big rebel rouse and fun songs.
So for y'all, when you are trying new songs, do you try them out live first, or do you wait and hold them until you're heading in to record?
This is the other fun thing. This is how this used to work. We now have a practice space downtown.
Sweet.
That's awesome. We load in, we practice again. But what's upstairs is our friend Chris Scott has a studio.
Oh.
So we get to go downstairs, work up a song, or work on it for about a week. We'll work on some stuff, and then we'll go upstairs and record it, do demos immediately. That way you can be like, that bridge is too long, this doesn't work, or I need to learn a part for this. Can I take this home? Because in the old days, it used to be, there's a couple of records that we didn't actually know how to play. We would record them and then go home and be like, okay, we have to learn how to play the new record because we know half of it, but the other half we wrote in the studio.
Right.
But now, with being able to go in, we can now start playing songs. Like on this last record, we were able to play 6 or 7 of the new songs before the record even came out, which in the same kind of situation was awesome simply because people were recording those songs video-wise and putting them on YouTube. So it was kind of cool that people were learning. Like, we would play somewhere. We play, oh, hey, we're playing Learn and Work, new song. Sometimes if you go back and look at those old YouTube clips, those songs are different than recorded because we hadn't even really got them solidified. We were just trying them out. But you go somewhere 2 weeks later, and people are singing along to 4 of the new songs.
Cool.
And it's awesome. So when the record finally comes out, people are like, I want to hear the real version of this, or I'm excited, you know. We forever didn't play the new songs before they came out, maybe one if we knew it. Nowadays, we're able to introduce them before the record comes out. On the record release tour, actually be able to play all the songs on that tour.
Not just from instrumentation. So, I mean, obviously you can't take a full gospel choir with you on the road for every show.
Well, you know, Rick sings a little bit on that gospel choir part. He does a nice high harmony. It shows the choir should be. And the
sure.
choir is really only 3 talented ladies that we doubled up.
Other than production and instrumentation, what stylistically has changed for you all since Women in Work has come out?
Man, honestly, we hadn't even had a chance to breathe. The record came out like March 13th. We left March 9th. We did 8 weeks. We came home. We did the show with the Memphis Symphony Orchestra. We
right.
did a High Tone, which is a smaller club here, record release. We did the family picnic. We've done tons of stuff. We were supposed to do a video, but Roy's grandmother passed last week.
Oh, I'm sorry.
He went down there. But we're going to do a video in July. We leave Monday for tour, which is also my 41st birthday.
Oh, congrats.
We're going to be gone. We're going to be doing Metallica Festival, Hootenanny in L.A., Forecastle in Louisville, a couple other festivals. Stylistically, nothing has changed because we're working our butts off. I mean, I'm trying to enjoy this week and get my house worked on and play with my kids before I leave again. Ben went on vacation. Like I said, Roy's grandmother passed, which is not a good thing, but he went back down. He got to go home for a second to Florida.
Yeah.
But what's exciting about this record that's different than all of them was waking up one day and having 20 emails and your tour manager going, hey, y'all are number 13 on the iTunes chart. And you're like, what does that even mean? Your record is the 13th top selling record on iTunes today or this week or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
And you're just like, what? You know, you're on the main, you're in the top 20.
Yeah.
And you're just like, that's dumb. That's got to be a mistake. You know, and he's laughing because our tour manager works with like All American Reject and
mm-hmm.
some other bigger bands who are used to having not just on the charts, but chart success, and getting to watch a bunch of guys that've never been on the charts before even just be like, what? Give me that computer. So that's been some neat stuff.
How is that changing the crowds that come see you?
I've noticed personally that the new songs are going over bigger than the old songs. And that's simply because, I mean, having been 8 records 14 years, having not been able to get our first and second record at all, you know, I think they're about to get reissued and everything. So there's people that starting with 1372 or starting with, you know, because you think that's been 6 or 7 years. That's two classes of high school or college. In the rock world, that's all they really know. They don't matter much as the older fans, but they're freaking out when they hear Bike Riders or Downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And that's their version of it. So if that's anything, you put an influx of new fans and then your new blood into anything, it's going to be bigger, but it's going to dilute your older fan base and introduce new favorite songs for people.
You briefly mentioned that it's been a while since y'all had headlined. Prior to this record coming out on your tours, were you all able to have choices in who was either opening for you or who you were playing with?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things, too, that didn't hold us back, but it made better touring, but not as popular. For years, it would be like, okay, y'all can pick main support because we know we need somebody to pull them tickets, but we're bringing a third act from home, like The Glass or Corey Brannan or John Paul Keith or whatever, and we're going to take them out. We want them to get to go tour for a little bit, play in front of some other people, Centromatic or Deer Tick or William Elliott Whitmore. Now, I mean, it's a conversation. We like to tour with people that we like.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily what you sound like, but mm-hmm. if we're going to have to hang out backstage and spend 6 weeks, you know, and days off and drinking and running around with, you can have the greatest band in the world, but if you're a bag, nobody wants to hang out with you. We have new management. That sometimes is a bigger discussion. You know, they're like, we get it, but if you find an opening band that pushes you into a sellout, nobody forces anybody on us. And that's the other thing is we went out on our own for so long, it got hard to open up for people because money-wise, we just, you know, you spend 10 years making your own money. You know, we're not 25 and can play for $250 a night. So it's harder to take a hit. Like, it was awesome doing Social Distortion. It was a good match. They were older. It was legendary. It was a good combination. You know, you substitute money for publicity, basically. And so that's the same with Warped Tour. I think the 15 weeks of Social D and the 10 weeks of Warped Tour, and when it came time to go out on a headlining tour for Women at Work, it pushed us into, you know, extra 200, 300 people. It was awesome. Getting to see that work was fun. Hey, guys, it's Brian from Lucero. If you want to get our new record, you should go to our website, luceromusic.com. Check it out. I'd love to go out with Tom Petty, or I'd love to open up for Bruce Springsteen. And I know it's less supporting Bruce as much as just getting seen by that crowd, just to be able to check it off your bucket list. We're too ornery and southern and old to get pushed around by anybody too much, told that we have to do what we don't want to do.
Has there been an opportunity to catch a band that was maybe a little bit more under the radar that really y'all were like, yeah, we dig these guys?
Festivals, that's for me, is like we played Denver Festival one time. There's a band that opened up the whole thing, local band called Nathan and Steven.
Mm-hmm.
And they changed the name to Hearts of Palm later. I think they've broken up since. But they're another reason why I wanted to try horns is Nathan and Steven, you think you're getting a duo, but it was like a 9-piece guitar, singers, a full horn section. Just, they were amazing. Looking at Hearts of Palm, man, they are
cool.
They were still in my face. Like, it was just, this is the greatest band ever. I literally went and found all their records and got all excited and that kind of stuff. Unfortunately, we don't get to see very many. You hear about a band, and then you try to get them to come open for you. That's how that usually works.
When y'all are on the road together, do you listen to music together or separately?
We used to in the van. It'd be whoever was in control of the stereo. And
uh-huh.
Then eventually everybody started getting iPods. Every once in a while on the bus, somebody will put something on. But it's just such a varying degree of opinions,
mm-hmm.
maybe would be the word I'm looking for. We listen to a lot of old soul and R&B and country stuff on Warped Tour, you know, in our tent world.
What do y'all like from soul and R&B?
I mean, you got your standards. Everybody loves Otis Redding. I almost can't listen to Otis Redding anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of just like, really? Killing me. Like the Stax box set, you know, the High box set, Joe Tex. I like that kind of crunchy late 60s. Like 67, not 63 where it's still a little bit doo-woppy.
Yeah.
But not before the 70s when it gets super political and super fuzzed out. There's
right.
that fine little line to where you're like, man, Otis Clay, or, you know,
yeah.
or still touch of gospel to it.
Uh-huh.
The problem is with the soul is it's not an album or artist-driven thing. That's where sometimes you'll end up listening to something and those guys had one hit. So you're just like, yeah, I like the Marquees.
Mm.
And you're just like, who? What? I've been this guy like Albert King. There's a record. There might be, as a guitar player, it's awesome, but just as a whole, called Jam Together. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's
no.
Albert King, Steve Cropper, and Pop Staples. Basically, they each get one instrumental. They all play on it. They all take turns, but each guy in the band gets an instrumental and a vocal. So you're hearing, like, She Gave Me Water, Not Gasoline, and then you hear the cover of Ray Charles song or whatever,
mm-hmm.
but each guy gets to do a song, but and they're just picking. So it's three dudes, just the rhythm section staying out of the way, and there's one instrumental where it's just like, it's almost like a soul, how to play soul record.
Nice.
You know, every lick in the world is in there. But they file it under Albert King on the iTunes, but it's called Jam Together. And I don't know if it's just because his name is first or something. But that's the kind of thing. I like guitar lines. I like a little bit of horn. Kind of Howlin' Wolf, but more soulful. Hey, this is Brian Boomer from Lucero. You should check out our new record, Women in Work, on our website, luceromusic.com.
Here in South Carolina, they have a bacon ice cream sundae.
Wow. I'm vegetarian. Been vegetarian 22, 23 years.
Really?
But I couldn't eat for the kids. Like, I mean, I could bake it every morning for them. I just don't eat it. I don't care to. Part of my punk rock roots is my dad's like, you're the fattest vegetarian I've ever seen. Because I do 100 push-ups a day, you know, whatever. I'm a little heavy, but I eat tour food, but I don't eat meat. But people are just like, how are you so big and a vegetarian, whatever.
Listen, Brian, I really appreciate your time on your rare day off at home. Thank you so, so much for chatting with us. Thank you so much. Safe travels to you all on the road. Appreciate it so much.
Oh, thank you so much.
Take it easy. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Country Fried Rock. Find the full playlist from this episode on countryfriedrock.org. Check us out on iTunes. No music, just talk.
Our theme music is from The Full Tones.
Our Country Fried Rock stinger is from Steve Soto and the Twisted Hearts. Country Fried Rock.
Copyright 2012
by Lilypad Productions. All rights reserved.
Ever he been helping us from Country Fried Rock.
Hey, y'all, it's Sloane Spencer. Thanks so much for finding all these new old episodes of Country Fried Rock. I've got something completely different available these days called Sleep with Rockstars. And it all started from a listener comment back in the very early days of Country Fried Rock who said, you know, I slow these down to 75% and fall asleep to them. And I was like, well, over the years, I started thinking about it, and I recently started Sleep with Rockstars. It's the Gen X Sleep Podcast, and you can find it at sleepwithrockstars.com or your favorite podcast app.